Now we continue Franz Kafka's classic story about isolation and what it means to be human. As Gregor struggles to remain connected with his family, he has high hopes that his mother will come to accept his new insect form and understand that he's still her son.
Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. Part 3. Gregor's wish to see his mother was soon fulfilled. For amusement, he had acquired the habit of crawling all over the walls and ceiling. He was particularly partial to hanging from the ceiling. One could breathe more freely, and in the almost happy absent-mindedness which Gregor experienced up there, it sometimes happened that he let go and crashed to the floor. But now, of course, he had his body under much better control than before, and even such a great fall did him no harm. His sister noticed at once the new pastime that Gregor had discovered for himself. After all, he left behind the traces of his sticky substance even when crawling, and decided to give him as much crawling space as possible by removing the furniture which stood in his way. But she was unable to do this on her own. She dared not ask her father to help. The maid would most certainly not have helped, for although this girl of about 16 had been braving it out since the dismissal of the previous cook, she had asked as a favour to be allowed to keep the kitchen locked at all times and open it only when specifically called on to do so. So his sister had no alternative but to fetch his mother when her father was out. And his mother did come, uttering cries of joy, though she fell silent at the door of Gregor's room. First, of course, his sister checked whether all was well within. Only then did she let her mother enter. Gregor had very hastily pulled his sheet down. The whole thing really did look like a sheet that had been randomly thrown over the couch. "Come on, you can't see him," said his sister, evidently leading his mother by the hand. Gregor could now hear the two frail women shifting the old heavy chest of drawers from its place. After they had been at it for what must have been a good quarter of an hour, his mother said it would be better to leave the chest of drawers where it was, for in the first place it was simply too heavy, and they would not finish before his father arrived. And secondly, it was by no means certain that by removing the furniture they were doing Gregor a favour. It seemed to her that the opposite was the case. She found the sight of the bare wall downright depressing. And why shouldn't Gregor share the same feeling, since he had long before grown used to these pieces of furniture and would therefore feel abandoned in the empty room? "And wouldn't it look," his mother concluded very quietly, "as if by removing the furniture we were giving up all hope of him making a recovery? I think it would be best if we tried to keep the room in exactly the same state as before, so that when Gregor returns to us, he'll find everything the same, and it will be that much easier for him to forget what has happened in the meantime." On hearing his mother's words, Gregor realized that the lack of all direct human communication, together with a monotonous life in the midst of his family, must have confused his mind in the course of these last 2 months. For he could not explain to himself in any other way how he could have seriously wished to have his room cleared out. Did he really want to have his warm room, comfortably furnished with the family heirlooms, transformed into a cave, in which admittedly he would be able to crawl about freely in all directions, but at the cost of swiftly and totally forgetting his human past? He was already on the verge of forgetting it, and only his mother's voice, which he had not heard for so long, had brought him to his senses. But his sister unfortunately thought otherwise. Not without some justification, she had grown accustomed to taking on the role of a particularly well-qualified specialist whenever Gregor's affairs were being discussed, and so her mother's advice was now sufficient reason for her to insist on the removal of not only the chest of drawers and desk, which was all she had been planning at first, but of every item of furniture, apart from the indispensable couch. It was, of course, more than childish defiance and the self-confidence so painstakingly acquired in recent weeks that determined her to make this demand. Perhaps a contributory factor was the romantic spirit of girls of her age, which seeks fulfillment at every opportunity and which had now tempted Greta into making Gregor's situation even more horrific, so that she could be of even greater help to him than before. For no one but Greta would ever dare to set foot in a room in which Gregor reigned in solitary state over the bare walls. And so she would not allow her resolve to be shaken by her mother, who, out of sheer nervousness, soon fell silent and began doing all she could to help his sister get the chest of drawers out. Although Gregor kept telling himself that nothing out of the ordinary was happening, that only a few pieces of furniture were being moved, he was soon forced to admit that the women's to-ing and fro-ing, their little calls to each other, the scraping of the furniture on the floor, were affecting him, and no matter how firmly he drew in his head and legs and pressed his body against the floor, he knew for certain that he would not be able to stand it much longer. They were clearing out his room, depriving him of everything he loved. They had already carried out the chest of drawers which contained his fret saw and other tools. Now they were prizing free the desk that had embedded itself in the floor, at which, as a student of commerce and before that as a schoolboy, he had always done his homework. And he simply had no more time to verify the good intentions of the two women, whose existence he had in any case almost forgotten, for they were so exhausted that they were now working in silence, and only the heavy shuffling of their feet could be heard. And so he broke out. In the adjoining room, the women were leaning against the desk to catch their breath for a moment. He changed direction four times. He really had no idea what to salvage first. Then, noticing the picture of the lady draped in nothing but furs, he quickly crawled up to it and pressed himself against the glass. This picture, at least, which Gregor was now completely covering, was certainly not going to be taken from him. He twisted his head round towards the living room door to observe the women when they returned. They had not given themselves much of a rest and were already coming back. "So, what shall we take next?" said Greta, and looked about her. And then her eyes met Gregor's as he clung to the wall. It was probably only because her mother was there that she kept her composure. She lowered her face close to her mother's to prevent her from looking round and said, albeit in a quavering voice, "Come along. Hadn't we better go back to the living room for a moment?" It was clear to Gregor what Greta was up to. She wanted to lead her mother to safety and then chase him down from the wall. Well, just let her try. He would not part with this picture. He would sooner fly into Greta's face. But Greta's words had only served to increase her mother's anxiety. She stepped to one side, caught sight of the huge brown blotch on the flowered wallpaper, and before it had really dawned on her that it was Gregor, she cried out in a harsh voice, "Oh God, oh God," and fell across the couch with outstretched arms. "You, Gregor," cried his sister with raised fist and piercing eyes. These were the first words she had addressed to him directly since the transformation. She ran into the adjoining room to fetch some smelling salts to revive her unconscious mother. Gregor wanted to help, but he was stuck to the glass and had to tear himself free. Then he too ran into the adjoining room as though he could give his sister some advice, as in the past. But once there, he had to stand idly behind her. While rummaging around among various little bottles, she turned round and was startled. A bottle fell to the floor and broke. A shard of glass wounded Gregor in the face. Some kind of corrosive medicine poured over him. Without delaying any longer, Greta now gathered up as many bottles as she could and ran with them into her mother. She slammed the door behind her with her foot. Gregor was now cut off from his mother, who, through his fault, was perhaps near to death. Tormented by self-reproach and anxiety, he began to crawl. He crawled over everything, walls, furniture, and ceiling, until finally, in his despair, with the whole room starting to spin around him, he fell down onto the middle of the big table. A short time passed. Silence reigned all around. Perhaps that was a good sign. Then the doorbell rang. The maid, of course, was locked up in her kitchen, and so Greta had to open the door. It was Gregor's father. "What's happened?" were his first words. Greta's appearance must have told him everything. Greta replied in a muffled voice, with her face presumably pressed against her father's chest. "Mother fainted, but she's better now. Gregor's broken loose."
"I knew it," said his father. "I kept telling you it would happen, but you women never listen."
It was clear to Gregor that his father had misinterpreted Greta's all-too-brief announcement and assumed that Gregor had been guilty of some act of violence. He now, therefore, had to try and calm his father down, for he had neither the time nor the means to explain the situation to him, and so he fled to the door of his room and pressed himself against it so that when his father came in from the hallway, he could see at once that Gregor had every intention of returning to his room. But his father was in no mood to notice such niceties.
"Aha!"
he cried on entering, in a tone that suggested simultaneous rage and delight. Gregor drew his head back from the door and lifted it towards his father. He had really not pictured his father the way he now stood there. Admittedly, he had been too absorbed by his newfound interest in crawling to concern himself, as he used to, with what was going on in the rest of the apartment, and he ought really to have been prepared to find that circumstances had changed. Yes. Yes, but could this really be his father? The same man who used to lie wearily in bed whenever Gregor set out on a business trip, who greeted him wearing a dressing gown and reclining in an armchair when he returned in the evening, who was actually hardly capable of getting to his feet, but merely raised his arms to indicate that he was pleased. Now, however, he held himself erect. He was dressed in a tight-fitting blue uniform with gold buttons, the kind worn by bank messengers. From under his bushy eyebrows, his piercing dark eyes had a fresh, alert look, and the usually dishevelled white hair had been combed down flat. He threw his cap, which was adorned with a gold monogram, probably that of some bank, in an arc across the entire room onto the couch, and he advanced towards Gregor with a grim expression on his face. Gregor had known from the very first day of his new life that his father believed that the only way to treat him was with the utmost severity. And so he ran on in front of his father, stopping when his father came to a halt, and hurrying forwards again as soon as his father made a move. In this manner, they circled the room several times, without anything decisive occurring. Gregor kept to the floor, especially as he feared that his father might interpret a flight onto the walls or the ceiling as an act of particular malice on his part. Even so, he had to admit that he would not be able to keep up this kind of running for long because, for every step his father took, he had to execute a whole series of movements. Signs of breathlessness were also becoming apparent, just as in his previous life his lungs had not been wholly reliable. As he now staggered on, hardly keeping his eyes open in order to concentrate entirely on running, an object that had been lightly thrown suddenly flew right past him, hit the floor, and rolled in front of him. It was an apple. A second one came flying right after it. Gregor stopped dead with terror. To continue running was pointless, for his father had decided to bombard him. These small red apples rolled about on the floor as if electrified and cannoned into each other. One apple thrown without force grazed Gregor's back and glanced off harmlessly, but another, that came flying after it, actually penetrated Gregor's back. Gregor tried to drag himself forward, as if the startling, unbelievable pain might pass with a change of location, but he felt nailed to the spot, and he stretched out his body with all his senses in a complete blur. The last thing he saw was the door of his room being flung open and his mother rushing out ahead of his screaming sister. She flung herself on his father, embracing him in absolute union with him, with hands clasped behind his head, begging him to spare Gregor's life. But now Gregor's sight was beginning to fail. Gregor's severe wound, from which he suffered for more than a month, the apple remained lodged in his flesh as a visible reminder, since no one dared to remove it. seemed to have brought home, even to his father, that Gregor, despite his present sad and repugnant appearance, was still a member of their family. And even though Gregor's wound had caused him to lose for good some of his mobility, and he needed for the time being long, long minutes to traverse his room like an old invalid, he felt fully compensated for this worsening of his condition by the fact that every day, around dusk, the living room door, which he was in the habit of watching closely an hour or two beforehand, was thrown open, so that, as he lay in the darkness of his room, invisible from the living room, he could see the whole family at the table and listen to their conversation. These were, of course, no longer the animated conversations of the old days, which Gregor had always recalled with some wistfulness in those tiny hotel rooms, when he'd had to throw himself wearily into damp bedclothes. Things were now mostly very peaceful. Soon after supper, his father would fall asleep in his chair. His mother and sister kept reminding each other to be quiet. His mother, leaning far forward under the light, sewed fine linen for a fashion store. His sister, who had taken a job as a sales girl, was learning shorthand and French in the evenings in the hope of securing a better position later on. Sometimes his father would wake up, and, as if unaware that he had been asleep at all, say to his mother, "You've been doing a lot of sewing again today," and go right back to sleep, while mother and sister exchanged a weary smile. With a sort of obstinacy, his father refused to take off his official uniform, even in the house. And while his dressing gown hung idle on the peg, he slept fully clothed in his chair, as if he were permanently awaiting his superior's orders even here. As a result, his uniform, which had not been new to start with, lost some of its smartness, despite all Gregor's mother and sister could do. And Gregor would often stare all evening long at this garment, covered with stains, and gleaming with its constantly polished gold buttons, in which the old man slept in great discomfort, and yet at peace. As soon as the clock struck 10, Gregor's mother tried to wake his father and urge him to go to bed, for this was no place to get a proper sleep, which was essential since his father had to report for duty at 6 o'clock. But with the stubbornness he had acquired since becoming a bank messenger, he always insisted on staying longer at the table, although he regularly fell asleep, and could then only with the greatest difficulty be persuaded to exchange his chair for his bed. Who in this overworked and exhausted family had time to worry about Gregor any more than was absolutely necessary? They economized more and more. The maid was finally dismissed. A huge, bony cleaning woman with white hair fluttering around her head came mornings and evenings to do the heaviest work. His mother took care of everything else, on top of all her sewing. It even happened that various pieces of family jewellery, which his mother and sister had once been overjoyed to wear at parties and celebrations, were sold, as Gregor discovered one evening from the general discussion about the prices they had fetched. But the chief complaint was always that they could not give up the apartment, which was far too big for their present circumstances, since it was impossible to imagine how Gregor could be moved. But Gregor realized that it was not only concern for him that prevented a move, for it would have been a simple matter to transport him in a suitable crate with a few air holes. The main reason that prevented the family from moving was rather a feeling of utter hopelessness, and the thought that they had been afflicted by a misfortune that none of their friends and relatives had ever suffered. And the wound in Gregor's back began to hurt all over again, when mother and sister, having put his father to bed, now came back, and his mother, indicating Gregor's room, said, "Close that door, Gaeta." And when Gregor was again in the dark, in the next room the women wept together, or just stared dry-eyed at the table. Gregor spent the days and nights almost entirely without sleep. Sometimes he thought that the next time the door opened he would take charge of the family's affairs again just as before. After a long interval, his boss and the chief clerk reappeared in his thoughts, together with two or three friends from other firms, a chambermaid in a provincial hotel, a fond, fleeting memory. A cashier in a hat shop whom he had courted earnestly but too slowly. They all appeared, intermingled with strangers or people he had already forgotten. But instead of helping him and his family, they were all inaccessible, and he was glad when they disappeared. But at other times he was in no mood to worry about his family. He was consumed by fury at how badly he was being looked after, and although he could think of nothing he might like to eat, he nonetheless laid plans for gaining access to the larder to take what was his by rights. No longer considering how she might give Gregor a special treat, his sister would shove any old food into his room with her foot before running off to work every morning, and in the evening, regardless of whether the food had merely been picked at or, as was most frequently the case, left completely untouched, she swept it out with a swish of her broom. The cleaning of the room, which she now always attended to in the evenings, could not have been done more speedily. Streaks of dirt lined the walls, heaps of dust and filth lay here and there on the floor. At first, whenever his sister came in, Gregor would station himself in corners of the room that were particularly filthy, implying by this position a sort of reproach. But he could have probably have stayed there for weeks without his sister mending her ways. She saw the dirt just as clearly as he did, but had simply decided to leave it there. At the same time, she saw to it, with a touchiness that was quite new to her, and was indeed affecting the whole family, that the cleaning of Gregor's room should remain her prerogative. On one occasion, his mother had undertaken a thorough cleaning of Gregor's room. As soon as his sister noticed that evening, she ran into the living room, and despite her mother's imploringly uplifted hands, burst into a fit of sobbing that his parents, his father, of course, had been startled out of his chair, at first watched in helpless amazement, until they too got excited. His father, to his right, reproached his mother for not leaving the cleaning of Gregor's room to his sister. To his left, on the other hand, he yelled at his sister, saying that never again would she be permitted to clean Gregor's room. And while his mother tried to drag his father, who was beside himself with agitation, into the bedroom, his sister, shaken with sobs, hammered the table with her small fists, and Gregor hissed loudly with rage, because nobody thought to close the door and spare him such a spectacle. But even if his sister, worn out by her day job, had grown tired of caring for Gregor as she had once done, there was absolutely no need for his mother to take her place, and no reason for Gregor to be neglected. For the cleaning woman was now there. This elderly widow had no real horror of Gregor. Without being in the least inquisitive, she had once accidentally opened the door to his room, and at the sight of Gregor, who, taken completely by surprise, began to run back and forth, had stood still in amazement, her hands folded in front of her. From that time on, she never failed to open the door a little every morning and every evening to look in at Gregor. At the beginning, she even called him over to her with words she probably regarded as friendly, such as, "Come over here, you old dung beetle," or "Just look at the old dung beetle." Gregor never responded to such forms of address, but remained motionless where he stood. If only, instead of allowing this cleaning lady to disturb him pointlessly, they had given her orders to clean his room every day. Once, early in the morning, heavy rain, perhaps a sign of approaching spring, was beating against the window panes. Gregor felt so exasperated when the cleaning woman started prattling again that he turned on her, albeit slowly and like an invalid, as if to attack. Instead of taking fright, however, the cleaning lady merely picked up a chair that was near the door, and as she stood there, with her mouth wide open, it was clear that she only intended to shut her mouth when the chair in her hand had come crashing down on Gregor's back.
"You keep your distance, understand?"
she said, as Gregor turned slowly around again, and the cleaning lady calmly placed the chair back in the corner.
Benedict Cumberbatch was reading Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. The translator was Richard Stokes, and the series was abridged and produced by Gemma Jenkins. The story reaches its tragic conclusion when, in a state of decline, Gregor rallies when he hears his sister playing the violin. Maybe this is the opening he's been looking for to enter back into family life. Find out in the last part of Metamorphosis at this time tomorrow. Arriving by TARDIS very soon here on 4Extra, Tom Baker will be digging out his stripy scarf for a new Doctor Who adventure.
Something is wrong with the TARDIS?
No, but something's wrong somewhere. That's one of the old interstellar distress signals.
Emergency? This is a message from space?
No, from Kent.